David Haig is one of those very versatile actors who has done all kinds of things. On screen, he was in four Weddings and a Funeral, even. There's inflation for you. He's been in Doctor Who over the years, The Thin Blue Line. More recently, on stage, currently he's at the Theatre Royal Haymarket as part of the new company that's developing there, and he will tell us about the plays that are going on there. He was in David Quinley's Journey's End, which was very successful in the original cast of that in London. Then from that to Donkey's Years, I'm not sure if there's anything in between, but
Mary Poppins
in between. So incredible contrasts in this career, and he's now got a comedy and an Edward Bond play that I know Jonathan Kent described as a comedy, but probably is a little more serious than The Country Wife. David, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you very much.
I know that you're trying to protect your voice because
I'm going to do one of those pretentious things that actors do and claim to do so often, which is speak quietly, because this particular performance, a lot of its, or his humour, is born of hysterical frustration and fury. I don't know why. I suppose it actually, probably in my real life, I have a sort of a fund of fury myself, and family life. I have five kids at home, but fortunately my family don't take it seriously and therefore find it as comic as a lot of audiences seem to.
I think that if you were reacting as you do in your part as pinch wife at home, then you would have had a heart attack long ago.
Yes, I know. One of the cast actually said, are you sure you're going to make it? He had a birthday recently and got his bus pass and was absolutely thrilled by it and attached no stigma to that achievement at all. And said to me, you better be careful, you may never get to 60 to claim your bus pass if you go on playing parts like this. So maybe there's a coronary around the corner, who knows?
Certainly hope not. It amazes me that you see actors on stage who go incredibly red-faced and they look as if they're sort of in an apoplectic fit, and you know that they're going to come off the stage, have dinner and do it again in 3 hours' time, and I'm just baffled and fascinated by the ability to do that.
I know. Well, actually, I think it does. Already accused myself of being pretentious by talking quietly at the beginning. So, at the risk of being pretentious again, these performances do actually cost more than people assume. Actually, I don't go out clubbing, drinking, and eating. And in fact, I didn't go to the company do last night, unfortunately, because I wanted to get back and, you know, rest up before doing two tomorrow, Saturday. You know, but there's something about investing that amount into a comic performance which is hugely challenging and fulfilling. Ultimately, I love disappearing into that world where you actually are beyond actually thinking articulately about what you're doing. You've set up the foundations in rehearsal and you sort of start surfing almost. That's very exciting. And I particularly get that out of a certain neurosis, angst, energy, fury in comedies anyway that seem to supply that. I don't know how to describe it. Almost you're sort of transcending any sort of enjoyment or lack of it on stage. You're just sailing on some level.
Does it become a little bit chicken and egg? Because you're so good at playing those parts, do you find yourself cast in them rather more than some other actors?
Well, recently, I suppose, having done Donkey's Years and this relatively close together, there may be that perception, though, as you rightly said at the beginning, I haven't been typecast over the years, other than the permanent professional moustache upon my face. But, if you contrast it with Journey's End, who was a very placid, benign, almost saintly man, who middle-aged teacher who went to the First World War because so many of his pupils had died, heard of their deaths and felt a duty to do what the younger generation were doing, you know, and went out there and was incredibly inconspicuously brave. And those are the true heroes, really. And so to play a character like that, as opposed to maniacally jealous, frustrated, hysterical pinch wife in The Country Wife, is great fun.
Tell us a little bit about the Theatre Royal Company, because this is a new development that is very, very exciting. It's doing something in the West End that hasn't been done probably since Olivier's day, I imagine.
Yes, that's absolutely right, and hats off to them, you know. They have handed the theatre over on hopefully an annual basis to a different artistic director each year, and that director can choose 2-3 projects, and Jonathan Kent is director of the inaugural year, and he is doing, as you know, The Country Wife, which we are now a couple of weeks into the run of The Country Wife by...
So I was just going to say, do you want to tell us a little bit about Wycherley's play?
Yes. I mean, written by Wycherley. He's one of those writers who wrote... He did write another play, but it wasn't nearly as successful. He seems to have written one great play. And the interesting thing about The Country Wife is there was a critic who said that it was the only piece of drama in the English language written exclusively about sex, which is probably true, because the whole thing centres on... You know, where, why, how you achieve sex, or how you avoid your partner achieving sex, and therein lies the whole plot. And it's a very funny play, but it's also an unpredictable play for the West End. It's not the fodder of normal West End. You know, it's not normal West End fare at all. And this is the great gamble that Jonathan Kent has taken, and which must be applauded in the West End, which is full of projects that are entirely confined within a commercial, on a commercial basis. And he's doing this restoration comedy, The Country Wife, albeit it being a very funny play. The Sea by Edward Bond, which hasn't been done for years and is a very wild, anarchic, actually defined as a comedy not by Jonathan, but though he does support that theory, but by Edward Bond himself, who, rather than the tradition of Shakespeare, has put a comedy at the beginning. And it's a loose definition because it's got some very, very dark undertones.
Well, Chekhov is another one who believes that everything's a comedy.
Of course, he's always defining tragedies as comedies. But then that's a very interesting thing about those writers, I think. You know, I mean, when is tragedy not funny? Very rarely. It's actually very often that the human condition is funny, whether sad or not. But anyway, so he's doing The Country Wife, followed by The Sea, and I'm doing the first two of the three, and then he's doing a musical finally to sum up his year.
By the Les Miserables team.
Absolutely, by the Les Miserables team. And hopefully this will set up a precedent in the West End. You know, if we can only get companies that survive within that vicious commercial world out there, but bring to more people interesting plays, less predictable plays in the West End, we may be on to something. But we have to A, do it well, and hopefully we are, and come up with stuff which people still want to travel on their coaches down to see and enjoy, you know.
It is a lovely big theatre, but it is a big theatre to fill every night.
It's a big theatre. It's wonderful acoustically. I've never played this one, actually. But and it's such a beautiful theatre. And indeed, we're sitting in a very beautiful dressing room, which I'm lucky enough to inhabit for the next 6 months.
I think it reminded me, I've got to say, I've been in dressing rooms around and about trying to drop names on Broadway and in London, and this is rather more like a hotel suite than a dressing room. It's just gorgeous.
It is. It's sort of got those it's curtains and gilt and a plethora of sort of stage bulbs and ancient chairs and wardrobes. It's really magnificent.
Which is a mark of your achievement. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about who's in the company? Because you're in this dressing room with a company that is just filled with big names.
Yes, well, Toby Stevens is playing Horner, the archetypal rake, who I think Charles Spencer described as a version of Mick Jagger in the Daily Telegraph. And Patricia Hodge, who is superb as Lady Fidget, and brings a sort of imperious lustiness to her role. Both of them very sexy people anyway, so that's all fitting for The Country Wife. In fact, it's my character who doesn't exude sexuality, but a sort of envy and frustration at everybody else having a good time, I think. And Fiona Glascott, who's playing The Country Wife herself. It's a terrific cast. Terrific.
And even someone like Janet Brown, who has tiny part in this one. I don't know if she's doing more in The Sea.
No, she's not in The Sea. I don't think she's in The Sea. She hasn't told me if she's in The Sea. But yes, Janet Brown is playing a smallish part, but very, very funny. It's a great all-round company. And that's the other thing the West End needs, is that sort of depth of casting that really only the subsidised company have a tradition for. So touch wood, and as I say, there is much ancient wood in this room. I'm touching it now. This will be a successful project.
Edward Bond has a reputation, well, for being banned probably more than anything else. Saved was terrifying and shocking, and it was a sort of blasted for the 60s probably.
Yeah.
And he's out of fashion in the UK, though I suspect probably played a lot more in Europe.
Yes.
Very, very brave decision to put him onto a big stage that needs filling every night for several months.
I know. Very brave. It's a play I've loved for 30 years. And interesting that he should define that one of all his plays. I don't know if he has defined others as comedies, because there is a strand of the play that's very dark, which is my strand of the play, playing a mad, aspiring, a draper who tries to hold down, survive as a draper in this small East Anglian town, and actually goes insane. And his war is with an aristocrat called Mrs. Raffy, who is to be played by Eileen Atkins. And her strand of the play is really genuinely extremely funny. She's part of an amateur dramatics company, and their rehearsal is hysterical. Reminds me actually slightly of the rehearsal in Our Country's Good that I did all those years ago in 1988. The same sort of chaotic enthusiasm this amateur company have for theatre. And then there is a funeral on the top of a cliff involving Mrs. Raffy and much spilt ash, and which I think is one of the funniest scenes ever written, let alone by Edward Bond. But it's a wonderful contrast of extremes. If we can just make it palatable, as it were, for a West End audience by blending those two scenes in the play, then I think we've got a chance. But it excited me enormously when I heard he was doing the sea. I actually played this character, Hatch, that I'm now playing at 52 years old. I played it for 3 nights at drama school at Lambda, and I still remember it as one of the most satisfying things I ever did, and then I was 23 or something.
How wonderful. Great to have another opportunity with it.
Yeah.
We've talked about the broad comedy, we've talked about Edward Boyd and alluded to one or two other things. A play that you appeared in a few years back is now being filmed, I understand, with you in the part of Rudyard Kipling. Mm. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and maybe about its playwright as well?
Mm. Well, the playwright is coincidentally me. I wrote the play 13 years ago for the old Hampstead Theatre Club before it was rebuilt.
You might even want to tell us its name.
My Boy Jack is the name of the play. And it was very successful then, and it was about Rudyard Kipling's inadvertent complicity in his own son's death. I suppose that's the most concise way of defining it. His son, John Kipling, was incredibly short-sighted, like his father. Like every other boy of his generation, was desperate to fight in the First World War. And the army turned him down twice, the navy turned him down once, which is something, for they wanted volunteers at that time, and they still turned him down. But Kipling was determined, and he, John, was determined that he should fight. And Kipling swung him a commission through his old friend Lord Roberts, and John went off to fight and died on his first day, in his first action, in the rain, in his glasses, unable to see anything. And what fascinated me, apart from the greedy fact that Rudyard Kipling looks exactly like me, but what fascinated me was how similar Kipling was to my own father, in fact. And it became a very personal journey writing it, because they both share this paradoxical combination of tyranny and magical inventiveness as a parent. So John's childhood, the inventor of the Just So stories, the inventor of the Jungle Book, was magical, wonderful. He got, as a teenager, he met the different Kipling, the Rudyard Kipling, who was the apologist for empire and who was determined that he'd fight. And it's that paradox that interested me. My own father was in the army for 20 years and then ran the Hayward Gallery when it first opened for 10 years. And you've got that same combination of artistic sensitivity with old Victorian values. So that's what interested me, why I wrote the play. It did very well, and it was first commissioned as a film 11 years ago, and it's taken 11 years to now get it made as a two-hour television film for ITV1, and it comes out on Remembrance Sunday, November the 11th. And Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, plays my son, John Kipling, which is one of the many reasons I'm delighted it's taken as long as 11 years, because he is absolutely perfect for the part.
And he wouldn't have been when he was age six, probably.
And he wouldn't have been when he was age six, and nor would Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City be suitable for my wife, Mrs. Kipling. And she's playing Carrie Kipling, because Rudyard Kipling did marry an American, a very posh New Englander from Vermont. And it's a dream realised. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. 22 years ago, when I was doing Tom and Viv on Broadway, the American actor Ed Herman, who played Elliot, handed me a biography of Rudyard Kipling, and in the front he wrote, "Here's hoping your Rudyard comes to pass." That was 22 years ago. And now it's, what, 3.5 weeks till it comes out.
How difficult did you find, both on stage and on screen, acting in your own play? I don't know who's directing on the screen. Is that you're not doing that as well?
No, I haven't directed it. I have a completely meaningless title of associate producer, which I discovered actually has very little clout. But no, Brian Kirk, an Irish director who has just done his first movie, Middletown, and a lot of television over the years, and is an incredibly talented director. He's directed it. The first time we put it on stage, I found it very disorientating, hearing the lines I had toiled over, as it were, coming out of other people's mouths, and indeed my own. But once I broke through that barrier, it began to feel more natural. And it's been such a long journey, I almost feel I inhabit this alter ego, as it were, which I'm sure is not, strictly speaking, Rudyard. It's a hybrid of my father and Rudyard, and so it becomes a different persona. But I don't have to think about acting him now, you know. And so when I was filming it, my concerns were all other concerns, whether what a beautiful set Dave Arrowsmith had built for the Bateman's interior, or that's the house they lived in, or issues like that. And then I'd get on with the acting. So let's hope it comes. Well, I've seen it and it seems all right, But by the time we got to filming it, it didn't concern me.
And you don't get offended by a director who rips out your words and moves them around, or by an actor who doesn't say them properly, or anything like that?
Not really. I suppose I was always there. I don't think I missed more than about two scenes in the whole filming process, and I was always there to chat to everybody, and if a line or lines needed rewriting because of the logistics of the set or something, I would do it on set. And that was often useful because one knows the story so well, I could come up with something slightly more quirky and hopefully original than if somebody had had to invent something at short notice, not being the writer. But I don't think I was proprietorial or authoritative about it. I was just there hopefully to help. As far as the other actors, they were all so good, it was a liberating thing, not an entrapping thing, to see them or hear them say my lines.
That's wonderful. What does the future hold for David Hay? Clearly the relatively short-term future keeps you tied to the Theatre Royal Haymarket. You've got other projects lined up at the moment, writing, acting?
Yeah. Well, I go on with this till April. The sea ends in April. And I have two or three projects that I would like to take further from the writing point of view, you know, sort of dormant screenplays and a stage play, a third stage play. I did two at Hampstead, and a third stage play which I would like to make better. It's not a very good play at the moment, so I'd like to improve that. And then from an acting point of view, I would like something to really surprise me and come from left field. You know, I've loved doing, in the last year or two, these high-energy physical parts, but as I said at the beginning, they do cost physically. And I would like to find a shift direction slightly.
If anyone's listening, what would you like to order? What about Shakespeare?
Shakespeare, in 10 years' time, if anybody respects me at all as an actor, I'd love to try King Lear, even if it's somewhere utterly obscure. And that would not be a relaxing part, come to think of it. I've always wanted to play Iago, the charming villain.
I'm not sure if it's a compliment. I think you'd make a very good Iago. It's probably an insult, so I've got to be careful.
Well, no, it's not an insult, because it is just something I've always wanted to do. I think there's something about his malign influence on that play that comes from a very accessible, charming surface veneer, and I'd like to get to the bottom of that.
Fine. David Haig, thank you very much. While you've still got a voice, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Country Wife continues for probably a couple more months.
Yeah,
then
11 weeks, I think.
11 weeks. Then The Sea runs through to April. And what date is My Boy Jack?
November the 11th. I think it'll probably come out at 9 o'clock in the evening on ITV1. And please watch. Enjoy it, if that's the word.
Thank you very much indeed.